Hi! Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast program. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your peers on the entrepreneurial journey of self-discovery, leadership revolution, and life success. Learn something new from our mentoring conversation today. Hey, everybody. Say, outside of doing We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast, I also own a business called We Mentor Inc., which funds this program. It's an innovative mentoring community where small business owners create a leadership foundation of mutual spiritual advancement and profitability. So we care about the people that we employ. And we're trying to make a living while we're developing a really conscientious and accountable staff. So people hire me for one-on-one mentoring, or they join our one-year We Mentor Entrepreneurial Leadership and Mentoring Lab, where you re-examine your life work and you lead from a new perspective. You get to feel more deeply, to think, act, and behave more consciously so that you can break through new dimensions of yourself on the leadership track. So you can check it out at wementor.com. And if you haven't subscribed yet, hey, come on. I think you'll want to be getting my private emails. I got extra stuff in there for the listeners, for you. So tune in. Today, Alan Wallner of WCreativeBranding.com is sponsoring this episode. W Creative is a brand design company. Branding to a company is as important as air is to humans. Without it, you cannot survive. They ask their clients to breathe deep and examine from within. They ask clients to build their brand from core values, purpose, and passion to provide focus, distinction, and authenticity. When a brand comes from their purpose, it reveals opportunities to play a bigger game in building their brand. Their clients know how to deliver on their brand promise, from top executives to employees and even their partners. By delivering on a brand promise consistently, be it in person, on paper, online, or through staff, their clients are able to create a memorable and remarkable brand experience that attracts and motivates people to share the experience with others. So check out WCreativeBranding.com and talk to Alan Wallner. He's amazing. All right. Thanks for tuning in. So today, we are so fortunate. I've been waiting for this, people, and you will understand why once we get talking. But in the studio is author and graphic designer, Carolyn Porter. Hey, Carolyn.
Delighted to be here.
Oh, I'm so glad you're here. So Carolyn, she's written this book, and it's called Marcel's Letters, A Font and the Search for One Man's Fate. Now, when you first think about, like, you know, writing about a font, you think, well, what can be said about a font? I mean, is that really going to be an interesting book?
I have heard people say that they weren't interested in reading it because they're like, a font, how boring. I have no interest in reading a book about a font.
Yeah. Oh, but then I started reading and, oh my gosh, it's like this huge mystery story. And it's true.
Right.
It's your journey, right, discovering a font and the history of another person.
Right.
All right. So she was seeking inspiration for a new font design in an antique store in small town Stillwater, Minnesota. Graphic designer Carolyn Porter stumbled across some old letters and was immediately drawn to the beautifully expressive pen and ink handwriting. She could not read the letters. They were in French, but she noticed they had been signed by a man named Marcel and mailed from Berlin to France during the middle of World War II. As Carolyn grappled with designing the font, she decided to have one of Marcel's letters translated. Reading words of love combined with testimony of survival inside a German labor camp transformed Carolyn's curiosity into an obsession, and she sought to find out why the letter writer, Marcel Huse, had been in Berlin, how his letters came to be for sale in a store halfway around the world, and most importantly, whether he returned to his beloved wife and daughters after the war. Marcel's Letters is the incredible story of Carolyn's increasingly desperate search to find answers to the mystery of one man's fate, answers that would come from Germany, France, and the United States. Simultaneously, she would continue to work on what would become the acclaimed P22 Marcel script font, immortalizing the man and his letters that waited years to be reunited with his family. It is a beautiful love story, and I hold this book like so carefully because the journey that it took for you to write this book and find these people, and then you get a font out of the deal.
I mean, it was one of those projects that started so innocently. I wanted to design a font that mimicked the look of old handwriting, and it was a silly little side project, just something I had always wanted to do. I love old handwriting. I've studied typography as a graphic designer, and I honestly thought the project would take a few months, maybe working on it evenings and weekends, but it has consumed the last almost 16 years of my life now.
Wow.
But it was just one of those things. It just started innocently enough. If I had any idea what I was in for, I'm not sure that I would have ever started the font.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell us what led you, so you've been on your own for 16 years.
Right.
Kind of tell us a little bit about your upbringing and what were the kinds of things that you did as a youngster that, it sounds like you've been a very creative person and very curious.
So I grew up south of Madison, Wisconsin, actually south of Verona, and I lived out in the country, and I was really involved in 4-H. And this might sound silly, but, I can trace a lot of the creative curiosity to 4-H. My parents were really involved, and we did everything from sewing to leather craft to making posters on how to downhill ski, or cross-country ski downhill, rather.
Okay.
But even some of those projects, like designing that poster, ultimately led to thinking about typography and information design and graphic design, even though at that time I didn't know those terms. I didn't hear those terms. I was just designing a poster. I was a kid.
Yeah.
But all of those things ultimately led to or played part of deciding to go into graphic design.
So this was before computers?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. It was all hand lettered.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Did you do calligraphy?
I did. I was never good enough at it. Even as a kid, I was really frustrated by it because the letters were never perfect enough. As an adult, I've learned that calligraphy can be a lifelong practice, and there is beauty in asymmetry. There's beauty in imperfection. But as a kid, I didn't know that. I wanted my letters to be straight or perfectly round, and I was always frustrated that it just was never good enough.
Okay. Wow.
Which is one reason that ultimately I think it makes sense to design letters as part of a font, mm-hmm. because I can refine that letter 20, 40, 60 times to make sure a curve is just right or, a line is perfectly straight.
Yeah.
And you can't make those kinds of incremental revisions in calligraphy.
Yeah, right. That makes a lot of sense. What were some of the things you were interested in high school?
I was in band. I was never very good, but I think it was more of a social outlet. I never took any art classes in high school.
That's surprising.
But I think the school that where I went to high school, art classes were looked at as an alternate to like a study hall, and my parents were more focused on academics than art.
Sure.
But when it was time to think about where I wanted to go to college, I heard somebody talk about graphic design, And immediately I knew that was a great fit for the way that my brain works, which is this combination of really technical thinking, but also creative thinking. And when I heard somebody describe graphic design as combining words and images and establishing a hierarchy of information and making sense of information, it just made sense. And I knew immediately that that's what I need to do because that's how my brain works.
Sure. So where'd you go to college at?
I went to University of Wisconsin Stout.
Okay.
At that time, it had, well, it still does have an exceptional design program. And now, as a matter of fact, the program has grown to animation and different really high-tech computer design. At that time, it was pre-computer, and there were only a handful of graphic design programs, and they had the best program at that time. So computers were coming out right when I graduated.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
What was good about that is I think I was right at the tail end of learning graphic design in a very traditional pen and paper kind of way.
Okay.
And I think where that helps me is I can still think about problems that way, and I don't immediately just go to the computer to make it look pretty.
Okay.
You know, I can think about information and organization strategically,
yeah,
not just how is it going to look on a computer.
Yeah. Did you take any writing classes in college?
Only the mandatory classes.
Okay. And how did you do in like English classes?
Oh, it was always fine.
Fine. You know. Yeah. Not a big interest, but you did well.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm just like, wow. You know, it's amazing.
Well, and throughout my career, I've never promoted myself to my clients as a writer. But what I can do is I can offer editorial input when they give me something, and let's say I read it from a design perspective and it doesn't make sense. I can go back to my client and say, this doesn't really make sense. What if we changed it in this way? But I don't promote myself as a writer to my graphic design clients.
Hmm. I'm just shocked because you're a beautiful writer.
Thank you.
Wow. Okay. So so after you were finished college, you got a degree in graphic design.
Yes. Yep.
Okay. And then you were at Stout. Where'd you venture out to next?
Actually, I lived in London for about 9 months after college. I was pretty burned out. I just wasn't ready to jump into a career. So I got a work permit, which at that point was really easy to get. It was, you know, pre-9/11. I think everything has changed since then. So I lived in London. I worked in a pub.
Oh, how fun was that?
Yeah. I made like below minimum wage. But it was great. It was a fantastic 9 months.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool.
Met people from all around the world, got to spend a lot of time in museums, a lot of time just walking around. And then when that time was done, I was ready to then be a professional.
I see. Yeah, get serious.
Yeah, I suppose it was kind of like a gap year, but it was after college.
Yeah, right, right. A lot of people take it before college or in the middle or,
yeah.
Very good. And so you decided, okay, I'm done here, you know, opened up my whole perspective on worldviews and meeting people from all over the world. And so you decided to come back to Minnesota?
Or? Yep. Okay. I returned to a place where I had a very brief internship before I went to London and was there, gosh, I think 4 years almost, Eaton and Associates design firm downtown Minneapolis, under the tutelage of Tim Eaton. He is just a phenomenal graphic designer and was a great teacher. So every day felt like grad school. You know, I went to school. I went to work every day and learned something about design or working with clients or production techniques, all those things that you don't quite learn in college, but you need to be a proficient professional.
Yeah. Right. So what were like some of the projects you worked on?
At that time, a lot of companies did annual reports and they invested a lot of money in annual reports and photo shoots. And so we did a lot of annual reports, a lot of brochures.
Were you in charge of the writing or was it more focused on the graphics?
Design. Yeah.
Okay. Well, design. Okay.
I'm just like, where's the writing going to come up?
Yeah,
right, right. Okay.
Okay. So the next step in your career?
From there, I actually moved down to Dallas and worked at an advertising firm there. And that was really interesting in that I learned a great business lesson. It was a larger firm, and they had distinctly separate account management and creative sides of the agency.
Yeah.
And whereas at my first job, as designers, we also work directly with the clients. At this agency, only the account people worked with the clients. So all of the information that we got as designers was filtered through the account managers. And that was always a frustration because I always had more questions. I had more questions. They'd come back with answers and then I'd have more questions. So ultimately, what I learned from that was that I need to work directly with clients. And it took a while to figure that out, right? It was a very frustrating lesson to learn. But now, yeah, as a freelance graphic designer, it's a very flat structure. Anybody can call me on the phone if it's a CEO or, you know, a project manager or a printer or whomever.
Yeah.
I talk with them directly. That conversation isn't filtered through somebody else. And I learned that that's just really important to me.
Well, that also affects the design, doesn't it? Because you're getting the clearer,
for sure,
picture of what the person is saying than if it's filtered.
Right. Or if I have a follow-up question, I can call them up and ask them the follow-up question.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it seems pretty obvious, but that's not the typical agency structure.
Yeah, right. And so did you meet anybody fun in Dallas or?
The people that I actually got to know the best were also transplants to Texas.
Oh.
We found it pretty interesting that it was hard to get to know people who were Texas natives, but there were a whole lot of people who had moved to Texas from other places in the country, and those were the people that we became friends with and are still friends with some of them.
Hmm.
Yeah. But so, that might be the case anywhere.
Yeah.
To be fair about it, that people who move to Minnesota, perhaps,
yeah,
it might take a while to get to know native Minnesotans because we have our own lives and our own friends and,
yeah, you know, right, in our social circles.
Yeah.
And, yeah. And when did you meet Aaron?
Oh, during the time when I had the first job after I came back from London. I think it was about a year after I came back from London.
Oh, and where'd you meet him?
On a blind date. that did not actually go all that well.
Oh, who set you up?
Our mothers, which was kind of embarrassing to talk about. But our moms worked together, and
Oh, that's
we don't let them forget that, actually.
Right. Well, you brought us together. Okay.
Wow. No, it's all good. We've been married 22 years now.
Wow.
That was... But yeah, we met on a blind date.
So you both then moved down to Dallas.
Yes. Actually, we moved down there because he had a professional opportunity that was just something that would change his career ultimately. And I was ready for a change at that point. So I was ready for another adventure.
Yeah. And then you came back to Minnesota again.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then had a job in-house at a corporation. Was only there about, 4 months before the entire design firm was, or the entire design department,
yeah,
was laid off in one fell swoop. I think there were 41 of us who were laid off on the same day. So that was a very short tenure position. And then worked at another small design firm, was there for a couple of years. And then at that point, it was time for me to freelance.
Okay. And you decided, I'm going to put out my own shingle.
Right.
See what happens.
Right. I'd worked for others for a decade. It was time for me to work on my own.
And so you have, and for the last 16 years.
16 years. Yeah.
All right. And what was that first year like? So it was, what year was this?
2001.
Okay.
The first day of business was filled with hope and you know, excitement and terror and, you know, all of those things when you start a new business.
Just, yeah.
But filled with opportunities and ideas and big dreams and big goals and, you know, the sky's the limit.
Had you like shucked away a bunch of cash or monies to kind of help you so if you didn't get a project right away, you could fund yourselves or?
I did have a little bit of money from the layoff.
Okay.
I think it was $2,000 or $3,000. It was enough to buy a computer and, you know, get that set up.
Okay.
Not much more than that, but enough of a cushion. And Aaron and I live pretty modestly, so, you know, we knew that we could make it for a while on just one income.
Okay.
Not indefinitely, but we could do it for a while.
Yeah, until the next project came in.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it was just, you know, it was a big leap of faith, an exciting leap of faith.
And what did you do for marketing? Like, where did your first client come from?
Word of mouth. So my very first client was somebody that I had known from the job where I got laid off.
Okay.
So they went to a different company, and then when they heard I was out on my own, they hired me.
And what kind of a project was it?
A brochure, I think.
Okay. Yeah. When people were doing a lot of brochures.
Well, people still are.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. More than I think.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because I was thinking everybody just refers everybody to the web now. And...
Oh, for sure. For sure. But there are pieces that I think work better as a brochure where you can take it with you and easily refer to it. Or there are some demographics that don't have reliable access to the internet. So their brochures still have their place.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's good to know. Because I always think, I made a brochure myself, but I don't know. I just think it's a hard thing to hand out at this point.
I think it also depends on who your audience is. What do they need to know about you? How do they like getting information? And it's also an issue of volume, too. I mean, a client that I'm doing a lot of work with right now, they have a brochure that they reprint every few months, and I think they print 5 or 10,000 at a time. They just have that kind of volume that they're going through that quickly.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And so you launched your business, you got your shingle out, registered with the state. Did you do like your own social security number as you set up, or did you go as a an assumed name?
So if I remember correctly, at that point in time, there was also a strike going on by state workers. So I couldn't actually do any paperwork for a couple of weeks. So that gave me time to sort that out.
Okay.
So the first projects that I did were all Social Security, but then I ultimately registered as an S Corp. And I think that took about a month to do all that paperwork.
Okay.
And I made that decision based on meeting with my accountant and then going through some, you know, evaluating tax benefits to setting up a business specific ways. And then S Corp was the way to go, and then filed all that paperwork.
And what was the name of your business?
Porterfolio Inc.
Still is the same.
Still the same.
Yeah, good decision.
And Porter being my last name.
Yeah.
And then Folio meaning page, which actually has worked out really well because whether I'm designing a page or writing on a page, it works either way
for
the word folio.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah,
that's very clever.
And then day two of the business, we had talked about that a little bit.
Yeah.
Day two of the business was 9/11. So on the first day of the business being so full of hope and opportunity.
Yeah.
And the second morning, I'm sitting on my couch with everybody else, you know, at their home or office, watching TV, watching the attack of 9/11, and not knowing what that was going to mean for the business.
Yeah. And what did it mean for the business?
I think the business was maybe off to a slower start just because of all the emotions and the uncertainty and not knowing what happened. Yet business is also new. They needed to move forward.
Yeah, right. So then you started getting more projects in, and how were they coming to you? Did you join any groups?
I've always been part of AIGA,
okay.
Which is the Professional Association of Graphic Designers. But most of my work came in with word of mouth.
Okay.
And it has always been that way, actually.
Okay. Wow. That's really a true testament to you.
Thank you.
And are you involved on social media much?
I am. Yep.
Okay. And how what do you use?
Well, both Facebook and then Twitter, LinkedIn somewhat.
Okay.
I'm not as active as I probably should be, and it just is based on time and having to make choices on where you spend your time. But those three primarily. Oh, Instagram. I recently kind of started.
Okay.
Instagram.
Yeah. Right. But those are all photos. So I guess that's a good place for you to have your portfolio.
I don't have my portfolio work on Instagram. What I do is I have this obscure love of old handwriting. So if I find some beautiful old handwriting, I'll take a picture of that and put it on Instagram.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. Of course I would expect that from you. Oh, that's great. All right. Very cool. All right. So take us up to the process right before you started writing your book. So before 2011.
Okay. So the entire time between starting my business and then 2011, working steadily, other than 2009, 2010 were slower years because of the recession, but still had an adequate amount of work.
Yeah.
But kept very busy with client work overall. But in 2002 is when I started working on the font. That's when I found Marcel's letters at the store in Stillwater. So that was always a side project. And I think what I was looking for, although I didn't quite understand this at the time, was graphic design can be very rigid. If you think of designing something on a grid, very corporate, everything's reviewed by lawyers, sometimes multiple times. Depending on the client, work can also be reviewed by engineers. So it's very technical. And I think I needed a more creative outlet.
Sure.
Which is why I wanted to do
this. Where you didn't have to follow the rules quite as closely.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Or I got to make all the decisions about how it looked or what I wanted to do versus having to review it with a lawyer or an engineer.
Yeah, and you could kind of let your curiosity kind of go.
Right,
yeah.
Right. And actually, I know a lot of designers have side projects, and a lot of them are really messy. You know, it's woodworking or it's painting or something like that. And
yeah.
I do think it is an antidote to how precise graphic design can be.
Mm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Very cool. All right, so we're kind of to the end of our first session, and what I would like to, give the listeners is just, I love how you start the book, and I would like to focus our second conversation, if you're up for it, on talking about the book.
Okay.
And your process.
Love that.
Great. Okay. All right. So, actually, let's just leave it there. I want people's curiosity to be piqued.
So tune in next time.
Yes, tune in next week. The beauty, what I love about the book is it's really a love story. It's about discovering someone's letters in an antique store, and they're in French, and the whole part about, well, who wrote these? And when you had them transcribed, you found out that this was a letter to his wife and daughters.
Right.
And the beautiful journey that kind of led you on, because you were curious to know, what about this person?
Right. It was just peeling away one layer of the onion and then the next layer of the onion and the next layer, just needing to get to the heart of the story.
And because you didn't think you were going to write a book, it's not like you took a lot of notes about your process.
Right.
And that's even what's even more incredible in the book is how detailed you're able to be about your whole journey.
I have a couple good stories I can tell you about that.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure.
This is very worth the wait. I forgot to tell the audience, we met across the street at Jennifer Nelson's, who's also a graphic artist, mm-hmm. designer. Yep. You two have known each other you've been in the same field for years.
I've known her for 18 years, maybe?
18 years. Yeah. And so Jennifer found out that you published a book this year. And so she pulled together two book clubs in Golden Valley and hosted a party. And you came and you talked about your book. And what was interesting to me, because I'm not a graphic designer, but I'm always, as a writer of curriculum, been intrigued with fonts.
I love that. I love hearing that.
And it was just interesting to hear the conversation from a graphic designer's perspective. But it was also lovely to be in a group of, 20, 25 people?
It was a big group. It was such a fun night.
Yeah, it was really fun. And the conversations weaved around what was going on in World War II and everybody's experience with it. You know, some family members who had lost
right.
loved ones. And
right.
Yeah, and the questions that they had for you that were industry specific.
Yeah,
that you normally wouldn't get at a book reading.
I've been to almost a dozen book clubs, and each one has been so different. It has been fascinating.
Oh, that's very cool. All right, thanks, Mike Cabea, sound engineer,
thanks, Mike.
Photographer, brother from another mother. Guess what? Mike and I are taking the end of the year off. Since Christmas is on Monday and New Year's is on Monday, we decided that after our 104th episode, we're taking our first break. So we'll see you in the new year on January 8th.